You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 40 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this week, we are joined by a comics and graphic novel creator. She does writing, art, and everything, but just not the editing bit. Anthea West, all the way from Ireland.
Hi, Digwitch.
It's great. I will admit that I'm slightly amazed it's taken me this long to get another woman to guest on the podcast. At the same time, though, it's been slightly hard to find another lady. Apparently, our gender is a bit nervous about this podcasting malarkey, so they tend to be a little bit.
I can recommend you a good few.
Oh, good. We might have to
recommend you all the ladies.
Okay, we've got a couple of news points we want to discuss this week before having a look at what Anthea gets up to outside of joining people for random podcasting shenanigans. This week, I wanted to start us off with some pretty hardcore business news. Like, really hardcore. Basically, an American hedge fund boss.
So hardcore, I don't understand it.
It's okay. So an American hedge fund boss, Daniel Loeb, has been trying to break up Sony. For those of you who don't realise this, Sony isn't just the electronics arm, which obviously a lot of us are familiar with, and then the sort of the music and films arm. There's also an arm that sells life insurance and has whole loads of real estate holdings.
Obviously.
Because those three go together.
Well, who would have known?
Yeah. And I can
totally.
Yeah, they totally go together. And Loeb thinks that they need to spin off the entertainment arm, obviously ditch the sort of life insurance arm. And I'm not sure, I think the electronics arm was meant to kind of stand by its lonesome, crying into the night. Well, first off, Sony said that basically the entertainment arm, so that's music, film stuff, is not for sale. But at the same time, they didn't say, you know, oh, maybe we shouldn't get rid of the life insurance arm. Maybe they're thinking seriously about it. But Loeb was basically, with his hedge fund and compatriots, was going to basically put together the funds necessary to make this split up possible. Now, I could kind of see sort of the business sense, obviously, like I said, you know, get rid of the life insurance arm from something that's completely unrelated to what the rest of the company does. At the same time, I'm not so sure about the idea of splitting the electronics arm, which also includes the console manufacturing arm, and the sort of the music and film arm, you know, from each other. I think personally they kind of sit well with each other. It's like, you've made a Sony Bravia television, what are you going to watch on it? The next Spider-Man, clearly. That's not necessarily a good recommendation. People weren't too happy with last year's Spider-Man. I'm just saying, you know, maybe you don't want to be watching Spider-Man on your Bravia TV. Maybe you want to be playing something on your PlayStation 3 or the upcoming PlayStation 4 on your Bravia TV, and that just happens to be a Sony game.
In 3D, of course, because everyone loves 3D.
Exactly. But the interesting thing...
Oh, yeah, totally.
The interesting thing about all of this, though, is that it's not the only corporate manoeuvring that's kind of going on at the moment. Vivendi, the French entertainment company that owns a big chunk of Activision Blizzard, has also been, again, contemplating whether or not it wants to kind of sell off its stake in Activision Blizzard. Which, you know, I suppose kind of makes sense. It's not like they've done anything to revolutionise what the two companies are up to in these past few years. Perhaps they could do with, you know, a bigger, better, you know, sort of a head kind of corporate family kind of involved, you know, pushing them along, milking them for all they're worth sort of thing. I would kind of hope that if somebody was going to buy Vivendi's stake, that they'd do something about the release schedule. But then at the same time, figure out a sensible way to reinvigorate interest in World of Warcraft.
World of Warcraft has just been a revenue stream for them, hasn't it?
It's
just
but the problem is that obviously they're getting a degree of drop-off now, which is a case of, it's kind of getting to the level where maybe they do need to think about the future of it in a way that means that they could at least either stop the degree of drop-off from happening or, you know, obviously get new subscribers. I mean, at least they're not suffering from Coronation Street syndrome because of the general low age of their market.
There's a hell of a lot more problem that Coronation Street is going through at the moment.
Who here doesn't know what Coronation Street syndrome is?
What Coronation Street is.
Is Coronation Street syndrome being locked in the room with it being on the TV and trying to, you know, just sort of scratch at the door desperately trying to escape it?
No, but at the same time, some might describe that as Coronation Street syndrome. Coronation Street syndrome, I can't remember who first described it, but it's basically a way of describing how the market for a product is decreasing because the majority of its audience are over a certain age, i.e. an age where you tend to die. And you get to the stage where the rate of people dying who are fans of the product is exceeding the amount of new people coming into the product. So currently, I'm not sure if it's still particularly the case for Coronation Street, but so in the past 10 years, it has had more fans dying than it has had the acquisition of new fans.
You know, this sounds like the Conservative Party.
Actually, yeah, the Conservative Party is certainly suffering from Coronation Street syndrome at the moment. They've been admitting that a lot today, actually. They're like, oh, yeah, we got no traction with the 18 to 24-year-olds. To be honest, guys, you don't have much traction with the 18 to 40-year-olds, to be honest.
No.
But anyway, going back to the Sony breakup, I could agree with the idea of getting rid of this life insurance arm. But
it's a bit mad that it exists anyway.
It is a bit. I wonder why that happened. I mean, it's admitted that apparently if they did at least sell off the life insurance arm, it would probably generate quite a bit of cash. And considering the problems that the other two arms could be getting into soon, well, certainly on the electronic side of things with the new hardware releases.
That's the thing. That's why I wouldn't be in favour of splitting them up, because historically with big companies like this, that have, you know, these massive divisions that do weirdly different things, one offsets another.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like, I don't think an electronics, if it was just, say, the electronics arm of Sony, if it was separate from movies and such, how would they get the money together if they were just, you know, an electronics company to, you know, develop new technologies and especially new consoles? They cost a bloody fortune to develop. Microsoft do it, but then Microsoft Office and Windows.
I think a weird case of sort of someone like Sony is that it's never struck me as the kind of company where the money obviously reaches people who are at a certain board level and shareholder level, but I don't think it's necessarily like different arms go in and are sort of like reinvested into other arms the company, because obviously there's been sections of like the film bit that's kind of struggled over the years. And obviously, I mean, sure, the PS3, despite its dismal sales for the first few years, was, you know, able to be supported. But I don't think that's necessarily through the front funneling of money from other departments.
No.
Or arms.
Well, for a long time, I think the games division was offsetting trouble in the movies, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a good example of why I think they should stay together. And this is isn't the first time it's been floated. I remember a few years ago there were people saying, you know, flog off the insurance and, you know, make these separate. And everyone going, that's probably not a good idea if you look at how much these things sometimes cost.
Mm. I'm now wondering, though, who's actually bought life insurance that's actually, at the end of the day, come from Sony?
And why the hell don't I get it with PlayStation Plus?
Yeah, that's a good point. Why is life insurance not offered as a part of PlayStation Plus? It should be.
The latest Hitman game and insurance in case I fall off a ladder.
Exactly.
And all of your trophies go to your next of kin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to move us on to a less serious subject, but considering, okay, I just want to admit now, Paul and I did rewatch Fanboys in the past week and a bit.
Right.
And then this happened. And we were reminded incredibly of Fanboys, the film. So, if you haven't already guessed, we're referring to an incident that happened at a convention in Norwich the other week, where Star Wars and Doctor Who fans exchanged certainly at least hostile words to each other.
You know that bit in Anchorman where, like, all of the different networks kind of gather up to, like, have this one massive fight? I imagine that with the fan community. So you get Star Wars versus Doctor Who versus Star Trek versus
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to ask, do any of you have a Tumblr? Okay.
Yes. Well, the
Tumblr is the land of fandoms.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh dear God.
Yeah. I mean, Nerd Assembles run on Tumblr, and yes, as part of my maintenance of that and my personal Tumblr, I'm very aware of the fandoms. I like all the fandoms though, so it's always really annoying when they get a bit nippy at each other. It's like, come on, I like the Who, I like the Wars, I like the Trek.
I've never understood the whole, oh no, if you're a fan of Star Trek, you can't be a fan of Star Wars. If you're a fan of Star Wars, you can't be a fan of Doctor Who. And all that kind of thing. It's like, no, they're all great in their own ways.
I think with the BBC article that I read when this initially happened, or at least was reported on, they had like this charming photograph of a bunch of like stormtroopers kind of posing in front of a camera. And further on, they had this guy dressed as, I think, one of the doctors. He looked like he was far older than anyone we've currently had on the podcast. And perhaps...
Even me.
Yes, older than yourself.
I've just got this image of, like, stormtroopers coming out the TARDIS and the Doctor's kind of waving his fist at them. Get out of my TARDIS, you!
Get off my TARDIS. Doesn't work to put the image on my land.
Maybe a Star Destroyer flying out of the TARDIS door, because after all it can be infinitely big inside.
That could work. I think it could still be a slightly painful process, but nonetheless, it could work. But no, this just whole thing, and basically we had, so these were two, they weren't even like, they were fan groups from different parts of the country. They were two fan groups based in Norwich, went to the same convention because there were some Doctor Who stars there doing, was it signings or whatnot? You know, clearly wanted to get some signatures because, you know, that's what you do at a friggin' fan convention. When you say convention, ever say fan convention, it was a proper convention. You know, it wasn't just for anyone from one particular group. And the stuff was, I mean, when they initially reported on this, they tried to say that punches were exchanged and stuff. And it's like the police found that no signs of assault had actually taken place. But it was clear some harsh words had been said.
Yeah.
And they were all, well, not cautioned, but sort of told to basically stay out of each other's way. And like, these are friggin' geeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's good. Phantom Menace was better than anything you've ever done. So how dare you? Because Sylvester McCoy was the best Doctor. Right, that's it. Fight.
It just fight. It just boggles the mind. And it was the way they were describing it. It was reminding me of about half of the film Fanboys when the Star Trek and Star Wars films. Fans rather, you know, try to almost off each other.
I will have to watch that.
It's pretty
it's
good.
It's not exactly a highbrow film, but
no, it is a comedy.
It's not art house, you're saying.
It's not art house. Actually, it's got a lot of it's got quite a few cameos in it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So William Shatner appears in it.
Yeah.
Ethan Suplee. Ethan Suplee. Guy who runs Ain't It Cool News is in there. Smith. Seth Rogen. Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes are in there. So you've got a whole smorgasbord of nerds and geeks who are famous lurking in bits of the film.
Did you say smorgasbord?
I tried to say.
Smorgasbord.
Bored.
Borg.
Oh, I see what you did there. Oh.
Like a cheesy Star Trek enemy. As in literally cheesy.
Yes. I suppose what will inevitably happen, though, at some point, is if these two groups, because apparently they're going to have a meeting at some point this year where they try to resolve their issues, but if this can't happen, I do believe that in the future...
If this can't happen.
Yes.
Sorry. I'll
but then again, this is Star Wars. So what would be the Star Wars equivalent?
Star Wars equivalent of Khan.
I mean, it's You're Not My Father and then just saying no lots, I suppose.
I think it's just a no!
Yeah, but their equivalent moment would be when people from either group end up fancying each other and end up having this almost Romeo and Juliet kind of relationship, and it all just obviously goes horribly wrong. And that'll be what they're reporting on next.
Oh, you write fan fiction!
Oh God!
Wait,
I can see the flashback already.
We could never be together.
Oh wait, no, I need somebody to do a tune.
I'll show you the stars, baby.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. It'll be the most meta fan fiction known to humanity. Just be like fans have a Romeo and Juliet moment.
I think we're gonna have to make this film. Do it like West Side Story style, so there's actually singing and whatnot in as well.
Okay.
That'd be awesome.
I think that there'd have to be an adult cut.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yep. Probably. I'm going to move this on now from Julie fans.
Oh, God.
To the promise that there could be a sequel to Dread, despite previously saying, oh, it doesn't look like it's going to happen.
May I say, hurrah!
Yay!
It looks like it is hopefully, maybe at some point, could very well happen.
We need to remain vocal.
We need to remain vocal. This was the message Carl Urban told a interview with Collider the other week, saying you need to be vocal about your support for this film.
Who is it that made Dread? Can you remember?
Alex Garland.
I reckon we should go over to his house and just chant, I am the law! I am the law!
Could do that.
Drive around his garden on a lawgiver. No. What? No, that's a gun, isn't it? I've forgotten what the bikes are called now.
I can't remember now. Well, you could try driving around one of them. They were pretty big pistols. I'm sure you'd be able to find some comparison where a human being versus one of those pistols, it is of a size that you could perhaps use it as a small form of transportation.
I still think films like this should be made into, you know, like 10-episode series. With a similar level of budget.
At the same time, they would...
Like Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Oh, so like maybe Paul and I finally watched the first series of Game of Thrones at the weekend.
Finally being the operative word.
Yeah, finally.
Well, rest of us are watching Eurovision.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I managed to avoid Eurovision.
Oh, no, I went to a Eurovision party and it was awesome.
Did they play My Lovely Horse, which is, I think is still the best.
So funny. So funny.
That's because it's from my favourite series, not because of anyone.
No, I'm only messing with you. No, we lost. Ireland lost. And it was dismal.
So dismal. Did they lose as dismally as the UK, as England normally loses?
Yeah, we were dead last, and England, you guys were like 15 points ahead of us or something, and you betrayed us. Oh, England, we're disappointed with you. We gave you like 8 points, and you gave us 3. What happened, England? We thought we had something together.
Oh. See, this almost makes me wish I'd watched it.
Apparently, you should have. For the Sweden, for the intermission Sweden song alone, you should have watched it. It was the funniest 10 minutes of my life. It was just basically them making fun of themselves because they were hosting this year and it was so good.
I am intrigued.
There might be clips available.
Yes. No, look it up. Look it up on YouTube. Look it up on YouTube. You will not be disappointed.
I will.
To be honest, there might be, because it was, it's BBC that aired it in mainland here. So, there might be some stuff on iPlayer lurking in the corners.
I've already seen YouTube clips pop up.
Okay. At the same time, I'm now thinking that the next Dread film should be centered around the security necessary for Mega City One Vision.
The telly thing.
Mega City is intended to Eurovision. So here is the contestant.
It's been so long since I've read Dread.
Here is the contestant from Mega Block number 9. And here's the contestant from Mega Block number 1, and everyone, you know, competes.
And here's someone called Mom from Peachtrees.
There again, by the same token, you know, it's that sounds like the musical version of The Hunger Games.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
At myself,
yeah,
I would watch that. I would watch the book out of that.
As if, no, it'd almost, at the same time, maybe what would happen is that Anderson would have to compete, and then you'd end up getting this in this element of, like, Miss Congeniality as well.
No, she just screw them all up, mentally.
See, now I wish I was a zombie.
I think I've horrified poor.
Judge Anderson.
Okay, well, basically, the fact of the matter is that because of the cult following the Dread film has managed to garner since its DVD and Blu-ray releases.
Because it's great.
Because it is great.
Have HMV finally stock it?
To be honest, though, I mean, that whole administration thing makes it really complicated getting stuff in time.
Yeah, but to be fair, though, HMV for the first like couple of months of when Dread was out, Dread was missing. Everything else, you know, cropped up, you know, Ted and, you know, whatnot. But Dread, no, that was mysteriously missing.
But you're happy that it's there now to influence the masses.
Exactly. I mean, same with Looper. Well, not same with Looper. Looper was there from the beginning, but they missed out Dread for some reason.
But anyway, Carl Urban said that he has talked to Alex Garland, and it's not off the cards. They have been talking about it. I think the film's budget was just over $40 million. On cinema release, it appears, I think, that it managed to get maybe about $35 million. Okay, so it came in under budget. But, you know, DVD, there's strong DVD and Blu-ray sales going on. So, you know,
to mention soundtrack.
Fingers crossed. Oh, God, the soundtrack.
Actually quite cool.
The soundtrack to Dread is, like, one of the best parts of the entire film.
I still think the name was a problem, just calling it Dread 3D.
Yeah, if they called it just Dread... Because people are a bit hostile towards 3D
technically,
anyway.
I think on the Blu-ray version, if you don't get the 3D version, then it isn't Dread 3D.
It's just Dread.
So,
okay.
They might have rectified it for the DVD.
And also, if you're selling it to someone who hasn't read the comics or isn't aware of the character, what does Dread say? It doesn't really, it could be Dread. He is the law. Or something like that. A little bit of an explanation.
I think they couldn't have done it as a subtitle to, as in like Dread colon something. I think they could have perhaps, like you said, come up with like a snazzy tagline.
Yeah.
At the same time, because it was on such a low budget, the marketing was quite slim around the time of release. It wasn't as well marketed as it could have been. And also the fact that they were uncompromising in terms of the certificate they went after. They went they were fine with an 18. I think if they tried to trim it down to Stallone levels, which is a 15 for the 90s film.
We don't talk about that.
Yes, at the same time, I'm afraid I'm going to have to acknowledge it for this moment.
Yes, and acknowledge that it came out roughly around the same time, I believe, as Demolition Man. And it's got a very, very similar kind of, characterization and themes.
Yeah.
I believe this is no coincidence. Anyway, the main message, though, from the interview, other than the fact that a Dread sequel could still happen, despite previous rumours this year saying, oh, no, it's probably not going to happen because of how badly it did at the box office. The word on the street is fans need to be vocal about how much they love the film.
I thought it was absolutely amazing.
I thought it was one of the best adaptations I've seen from a comic into a film I've seen in ages.
Wow.
Apart from possibly stuff like Hellboy and Walking Dead, which have their own sort of twisty, turny
Do you know
differences, what? But yeah.
Yeah, speaking of zombies, though. An attempt to bring to, well, not TV screens, technically, no, more your computer screen. Okay, who watched Zombieland? The film.
Me.
Yeah, everyone here watched Zombieland, the film. And then we've reported on this previously, but, you know, Amazon, they decided to, you know, see what a pilot for a TV series would be like. That result was unleashed upon the internet masses. Well, I say internet masses, America. sort of in the last week over Amazon.com. While you were able to access the page where the free video file is lurking, unless you've obviously A, set up an Amazon.com account, you know, with a US address, and B, are tricking, you know, Amazon as to what your IP address is, you cannot watch this episode, this pilot.
So make your IP address wear a fake American mustache.
And I don't know, sing, what, other than the anthem, what's something that's quite American?
Well, Star Spangled Banner.
Okay.
Something like that.
America! I'm not going to sing the next bit.
America! Yeah, sorry. Didn't say anything, though. I managed to keep it clean.
Okay. Uninspiringly named, though, Zombieland the series. The one thing we can watch of it is the trailer, and we will be linking to it as, you know, part of the write-up for this episode. But
it's... I presume you want opinions on the trailer now.
Yes, yeah. Please.
Okay, well, my opinion is basically that this kind of bad conversion usually happens when they try and redo a British product, like Red Dwarf or Coupling or, you know, various other stuff. The fact that they've actually managed to trash their own IP, in essence, is quite astonishing. The characters didn't seem very likable, and they didn't seem very well acted either.
I think part of the issue, though, is that they missed that, yes, while there was comedy in Zombieland, the film, a lot of it wasn't very forced. It just kind of naturally happened through, you know, misfortune and, you know, zombie-filled circumstance.
I think it's kind of like when your friend, like, falls down and cracks her back or something, and it's hilarious. It's kind of like that. You know, it's not supposed to be funny, but it just is.
But then there's the trailer, and in the trailer it's like, oh, look, there's this lady that they've happened upon who seems to be really good at sourcing food or something. And then just as they're walking down the street, a zombie comes along, runs off with her over the side of a bridge. And they're like, oh, I liked her, and then sort of continue onwards into the day, night, whatever, you know, apocalyptic situation they're probably going to find themselves in next.
It's quite impressive when they miss the point that badly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know the kind of videos that you've seen on You've Been Framed, which are obviously stunted?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Yeah, because they were kind of like saying to each other, because I know there was like the opening bit in the film where they talk about, obviously thingies talk about his rules, and then, you know, they mention, oh, and zombie kill of the week.
Yeah.
And they decided, at least according to the trailer, to make a thing of this.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, that wasn't a big part of the film. It wasn't something that kept coming up again and again, that this was zombie kill of the week.
It did a couple of times, but the way that it did it was more...
It wasn't as in your face.
Yeah, and it was actually far more clever as well. You know, kind of, say, for example, the woman running inside with the zombie chasing her, and the piano cuts and smashes them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, interesting and, you know, whatnot. But in the trailer, I think it was like, yeah, the guy just points the shotgun behind him and shoots. And, oh, zombie kill of the week? Really? So, there's no creativity to that.
Yeah. But basically, Amazon haven't picked up the series from the pilot to sort of, you know, fund it for a full thing.
And who's to blame for that?
So basically, I believe it was the creator went online to Twitter and blamed the fans for it failing. I'm a fan of the film, and I'm criticizing a pilot based on its trailer. Probably not a good thing. But then I don't have much choice in this situation.
Yeah.
You know what this kind of reminds me of?
Detail.
Donnie Darko.
Mm.
Have you heard about the director's cut of that?
We have the director's cut.
Actually makes far more sense.
Yeah.
Although, you see, I haven't seen the director's cut. And I quite liked how up in the air a lot of it was. And I remember reading at the time that there were several people who were of the opinion when they saw the director's cut, it explains it too much. It removes the ambiguity and the a lot of the strangeness.
Please say, were these Americans that were saying this? Because they didn't even get the film the first time round.
No, it was, I think it was British critics.
I felt it kind of still left a lot of stuff up in the air. It's absolutely. Just that it had the narrative structure was a bit more sensible.
It kind of veered away from surrealism.
I quite like the surrealism of the film. It's one of my favourites growing up.
Sorry,
that was the wrong choice. I'm not that young. I do apologise. That was wrong choice of words. Teenagerness.
Yes.
Okay.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Sorry about
That's acceptable.
You can feel young. You can feel young again.
Sorry. Okay. Can I take it back more a little bit to Donnie Darko? I actually prefer the director's cut. Well, I absolutely adored the original film. The director's cut. It's not necessarily a case of also it making more sense. There was greater opportunities given to characterizing characters. So you got to know them a bit more.
You recommend I see the director's cut?
Oh, yeah, it's always worth watching once.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah, it's quite good.
I liked the original so much, I didn't want, much explanation.
Mm. Okay,
because sometimes it's a bit like you have a director's cut of something, and, where something was a bit, is it or isn't it? Ah, in the original one, you more or less have the director coming on saying, it was this way, and this is how it happened. And it's just, well, thanks for that.
No, it's not quite like that, no.
Right, okay.
Go back to Zombieland and the idea of the fans being blamed for it, no one being picked up. And it's like, actually, even though we can't watch the pilot over here in the UK, you can see the rating it's been given by people who've watched it, their star system. And it's got like over 4 stars. So trying to say that it's fans' fault, and it's like, well, no, because places tend to go off of metrics more than, the spoken word. This is why things like Metacritic continue to haunt the games industry rather than, you know, what people say. And so it's just kind of, you might have had like a few vocal things said, on Twitter or other, outposts of fandom. But, perhaps Amazon was just sensing, not quite, nah. But there's still the opportunity that it could be picked up by somebody else. Mm. Other people thinking, maybe it would be picked up by somebody like Netflix. And I'm like, well, it depends, because it's not entirely clear to me, at least, whose money was involved in making the pilot. Because it's like, well, if it was Amazon's money that helped at all to at least get the pilot made, which in theory I think it would have been, then I don't necessarily see it going anywhere near Netflix if Amazon money has been put into it, because that's a competitor.
Because even if they could sell it, it's just we're not selling it to them.
Yeah. So, but I don't know who else would really pick it up. I mean, keeping in mind that if it then went on to sort of like cable or whatever in the US, then its main competition is The Walking Dead, which has a really ingrained fan base. And it's a drama rather than a comedy, but it's
and
got
the
a
fans spoil stuff on the internet and the fans constantly.
Constantly.
No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers.
I'm not that far into it, so shh.
Oh,
The dead ones can still move.
Yeah.
No!
Actually,
it's all spoiled.
You know what? Talking of The Walking Dead again, though, I was looking around for when it was going to be on Channel 5 in the UK, because it's been on FX, and, well, Season 3 has. And I was like, oh, yeah, when's it going to be on Channel 5? Because they've shown it previously, usually starting in May the past 2 years. And there's basically somebody got tweeted at by Channel 5's Twitter after they asked them about it or something. And the comments were posted on, I don't know, somewhere like maybe Digital Spy or something. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's coming, but we can't tell you when. And
it's
currently
coming, but we're cheap.
Yeah, and they're currently repeating series 2 on one of the 5 channels. But when it's actually going to, you know, switch to season 3 being shown primetime slot, not known.
We still need to pick up season 2 on Blu-ray.
I know we do. At the same time, I've recently finished reading the first compendium of The Walking Dead and was suitably horrified by the first 48 issues. Go me.
Which actually goes far beyond season 2.
Yeah, I know sort of some of the stuff that's happening coming in season 3.
No spoilers.
At the same time, though, I've also realised like how much they changed and added or took away in order to sort of put the script together for the TV series.
Mm.
There's a lot of changes.
I am aware of some of them, and no, I'm not going to say what they are.
Okay. And that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
We might get like lynched or something by Star Wars fans or Doctor Who fans or something because they're completely unconnected to their fandom. But clearly they can't like anything else.
It's okay. No, if they're Doctor Who like fans, I'll just wave a remote with a green LED or something at the end.
If you're wondering why we're not discussing the season finale of Doctor Who this week, there are two reasons. One, Dear Anthea hasn't watched Saturday's episode.
It was at the same time as Eurovision!
And we're not spoiling things for it, because that's just cruel. At the same time,
thank you.
At the same time, Cookie's not here, who's perhaps our most vocal Whovian.
Yeah.
So it seems a cruel idea to discuss matters with these circumstances to hand.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a new Who, but I'm not a, you know, dedicated Whovian from back in the 70s, 60s,
boo!
40s, whatever it was.
I grew up with Tom Baker. Doctor Who, you know, not...
Wait, it's like, if you grew up with Tom Baker, then that means you're even older than you've been telling us.
Yeah, that would be really weird.
He's regenerated.
That's a good point, yeah.
No, we know...
Timey-wimey.
I mean, we know that the 50th anniversary is coming in November. So.
Yeah. There was that whole date thing at the end. Spoiler at the end of the episode. They talked about the 23rd of November this year as a thing. So, you know.
Okay. As a thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, because there was a thing that happened, I think, 2 weeks ago, where the final episode leaked.
Yeah.
And then Moffat came out on Twitter and something said, like, if no one says anything about, like, if no one spoils shit for people, we'll release information about the 50th anniversary or something. So yeah. I think that was it.
Yeah.
It wasn't particularly difficult.
I know things.
It wasn't particularly difficult for me to avoid spoilers for the final episode in light of the ridiculous shipping mistake that happened in the US to people who had pre-ordered the latest.
Oh yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I
and what was that then?
The DVDs got released, like shipped out to people before the end
of the
series.
Whole series.
Yeah,
and this was the Americans. So the Americans actually had it before it was actually shown in the UK.
Yeah, and there were risks potentially of people spoiling it online. And despite the amount of Americans I follow on Twitter, as far as I can tell, none of them decided to act like assholes. So good on you guys.
Yep.
For not acting like assholes.
Good, nice, thank you.
Yeah, it's good.
How many other times can you...
That makes up for the Amazon.
Yeah, that makes up for the Amazon. I didn't get it spoiled for me at all, so I had no idea coming in on Saturday what was going to go on. Anyway, I'm going to take us away from zombies and doctors who regenerate again and again and again and again and cause horrible and wonderful things to happen. To be honest, you could describe his entire career like that.
I'll just say, you know, with that whole thing, I'm not going to say anything about it. But if you've watched some of the, you know, the classic series.
Yes.
With specific storylines in it.
Yes.
It all makes perfect sense.
Okay, well, that's something. That's reassuring. Yeah. Anyway, okay, I think now it's time that we talk about Anthea. Okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the moment she's been dreading for these past 40 minutes. Okay, so as we said at the beginning of the episode, Anthea's got this whole comics creation thing going on for her. We'll be providing some links to go with this episode, but there's this kind of like adorably sort of detailed, cutesy sort of style thing going on. And I've heard that the Earthbound God graphic novel is making its way to a second print run. I think
yes,
because this is obviously a thing. It's very real. I demand that you tell us what this graphic novel is.
Okay. Well, the Earthbound God is basically about these two hunters, Yei and Isha, and they travel about the place because they don't have a home, so they just do odd jobs for people. And they were hired by this duke to hunt down this Earthbound God that lives up in the mountains. And an Earthbound God is like a spirit that decides, hey, look at all these people with bodies. I want a body. And then it goes off, nicks a body, and then it changes it to suit what I want to be. And then it turns out, oh, crap, now I can't go to the spirit world. Oh, no, I'm stuck. And that's an Earthbound God for you. And yeah, and so Yei and Isha go up to these mountains to hunt after Midge, who is this big giant deer creature with, you know, abnormalities that deers shouldn't have. I won't say what, because, you know, spoilers in case anyone hasn't actually read the book yet or something. But stuff happens, you know, everything gets wrecked and someone needs to do something to fix everything. And you should stop describing
it
there.
I think that's fair enough. It does sound very
intriguing
and amazing. What kind of, because I'm sort of looking at the style and it's perhaps one, not necessarily the most cutesy things that I've seen of your stuff that I've looked through. What inspired you for the style of the Earthbound God? Because obviously you did your own artwork.
Well, it's mainly how I draw, how I draw normally, but I guess, this is a weird, my style is kind of just a weird mix of inspiration from Western and Eastern styles, and then having a breakdown at 16, realizing, oh no, I'm really bad at drawing, and then studying Andrew Loomis's work for quite a while to get better at anatomy and stuff. But, I think for the style with the Earthbound God, I went with a lot of white, a lot of empty negative spaces because it's spaced in winter and there's lots of snow. And you're supposed to get this feel of being, you can if you turn around, you'll get lost in the snow and, you know, you're buried, you're gone, you're gone forever. No one will find you. And kind of like that. I'm not great at describing my own work.
That's okay.
To be honest with you now.
No, that's fine. I think the art description there was pretty good. Okay, you've got coming up at some point, we haven't got any leaks of this yet, but Bob Hit Ghost.
Yes, that's it's a horror comedy, and it's going to be released in like short issues, you know, whenever I finish them. And it's basically about this woman called Bob, and her job is to go around and get rid of people's ghost problems. And she hits them with camogie sticks, and she doesn't like the job, but she has to do it. And that's really mostly it. The title says it all. Bob hits ghosts, and that's what she does. That's the entire premise of the topic.
That's fine. It reminds me...
It's like a name and a pitch.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
It reminds me a little bit, I have to admit, of... I'm trying to think of it now. Japanese anime. It's big, but it's cancelled.
Cancelled?
Well, yeah, the anime's been cancelled. Oh.
You're not thinking about... Oh, God, I've caught it!
No, you can't remember the name! It's not Naruto! It's not!
No!
Yes.
What
it reminds me of... It's... Jeez, I'm having actual...
It's the guy with the ginger spiky hair, isn't it?
Bleach?
That's the one!
Oh, God, I hope not!
No, with less fighting. Clearly, yeah. It's more the was it the episode in the first series? With,
was it Dragon Ball?
No, it was.
I just thought I'd chip in there.
No,
I grew up with Dragon Ball. I love that show.
Oh, the fights in that were just.
Well, no, there was more staring at each other and twitching muscles than anything else.
Very true. Yeah. Easier to animate, cheaper.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not like it reminds me necessarily of like the entirety of Bleach, because clearly that would involve you having like several issues where it's just one fight.
Yeah.
it's more the fact that you've got somebody who's sort of dealing with spirits, and it reminds me a bit of, well, it's more the dude that's like the reality TV guy that deals with knocking away spirits.
But, no, what I was actually thinking in my head is that it's a cross between Bleach. And you know the episode of South Park where Cartman attacks the underpants gnomes with a stick?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that now.
We are the underpants gnomes. I think that's how the song went.
Was that perhaps the episode, though, that kind of popularized the whole idea of, like, get stuff,
yeah,
profit?
Exactly, yeah. Steal underpants.
Yeah. Yeah.
Profit.
Yeah. Okay, no. So,
I'm just going to sit here, smile, nod.
Have you not watched enough South Park?
I watched the first few seasons and then just sort of wandered off.
To be honest, I think they do get better. Not that
you're... I keep hearing people say that, and then I hear that they're on, you know, season number stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but nothing. Season number stupid is nowhere near as bad as Simpsons season number stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, which is a conversation we've had numerous times.
South Park
manages the main threat. Simpsons just needs to die. Simpsons needs to roll over and just bury the yellow skin. Bye-bye.
I think it has died long ago.
Okay, but it just keeps popping up everywhere.
It does. I think what's really sad about these Simpsons episodes, like, there's been nothing quotable from Simpsons in, like, what, the last 5 years? Like, I've seen these new episodes, and there's, like, I can't quote anything from them. Well, like, from episodes yonks back, you remember every quote, like Dentalplan and...
Because they were gold.
Yeah, they're gold. Fantastically written.
What's crazy about The Simpsons is that it continued past the point of needing enough episodes to go into syndication. So...
The biggest question, how many times has The Simpsons jumped the shark?
They jumped the shark so long ago. That shark has gotten married, had kids, and then it got run over, and then they ate it, and then the kids were like, oh no, then they seek revenge, and now the sharks are Batman. That's how far they jumped the shark.
Yeah.
The sharks are Batman. You have to write a comic about this now.
Batman shark.
This will be. I know. We'll fit into the DC universe or universes, and it will be Earth. I don't know. 99. Yeah. Earth 99. It's Bat Shark.
I reckon it's got a against Bat Dog, as well.
Okay.
Bat Shark.
If it was
Bat
The Simpsons, surely it would be one of those. Is it one of the Halloween specials, where there's the uprising of the dolphins?
That reminds me of my friend does these short, really stupid comics, Brian Norton, and they're called like Business Shark or a salesman's swordfish, and they're just these, they're just about these like realistic like fish in like business suits, and like the bodies are people in suits, and then the heads are just like shark head, and he just wants to do well in his business.
I approve.
It just never works out because he's a shark. And they're great. He has a lot of work. Him and his twin, they both do comics. He's totally.
I think at this point I have to mention Sharky and George. You might be too young to remember this, but Sharky and George was a cartoon series that was mostly shown on Channel 4 over here in Britain.
Hold on. I'm getting nostalgic feels at the moment. Hold on.
We could sing the theme tune for you.
I think I might know. What? Go on.
Sharky and George.
Yes.
The Crime Busters of the Sea. Okay, there we go.
Yes.
Memories are running back. There you go. So someone's kind of done it already, but it's fine. I'm sure it's retro enough now that I'm not going to say rewear, but I think it's retro enough that somebody needs to repeat the series on some channel and then offend some parents because they can't handle their kids dealing with this level of quality entertainment.
As long as it's not redone in CG.
CG fish. I don't understand why people like Finding Nemo. Or Shark Tale.
So lovely. Oh no, Shark Tale was shit. But Finding Nemo. Come on. How could you not love that? I can't.
No,
there's this new abomination out though. I don't know what it's called, but the fish have these weird kind of human faces, and it's terrifying looking, and my brother took my niece to see it, and my brother came back and he looked traumatized.
Oh my goodness.
This sounds good.
Sounds
just how creepy these fish look. It's like, why do people think that putting human faces on fish is a good thing? Like, we already have the blobfish. We don't need any more of that.
I think what was it, possibly Bravo, a TV channel over here, had an I didn't like that for a while, years back.
Yeah.
Oh, was possibly Dave or something like that? Oh, I don't know.
You said Bravo, and then I started trying to remember whether or not that was the sort of slightly German channel that used to be on Sky. That I swear, that I'm pretty sure Sky at one point had a German channel as part of its roster that had the German version of Buffy. Roster, sorry.
Way back in the analog channel days, they had RTL and one something. And yeah, they showed Ramschkopf Enterprisen. And the thing that bloody annoyed me was that they were showing them daily. Rant moment coming on. They were showing them bloody daily, dubbed in German on free-to-air German satellite TV, and they were ahead of us. You have to dub them into German. Ramschkopf Enterprisen. You're showing them, and it's just, I haven't seen this episode yet. What the hell's going on? Anyway,
that's terrible.
Yeah, quiet. Okay, quiet. Calm. See your tranquility. I won't think of Michael Bay.
Okay, next thing, Anthea, I'd like to ask you about what you're up to at the moment. I've seen that you're involved with the Zenpop Comics Chroma anthology. I hope I've said that right.
Yes.
But I noticed that was being funded through a Kickstarter, which ended and wasn't successful. Is that still happening?
It was very sad that the Kickstarter didn't work, but it's just Kickstarters for things that if you're really, really well known, do a Kickstarter. But we're not that quite well known yet, but we're hoping that Chroma will help us get a step up there. Like, get us up on that step ladder that's a little too high for us at the moment. The Kickstarter wasn't successful, but we're, a hardy bunch. So we're doing a thing called Fund It at the moment, which is an Irish-based thing. a campaigning system.
Okay.
That, but it's strictly an Irish thing, and so.
Wait, you'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah, but we're wait. Yeah, so we're actually waiting to get approval from Fundit.
Okay.
Like, we have to wait for them to approve our campaign first. So we're waiting for that, and once they say yes, we'll be off, and we'll be doing the whole thing again to, you know, help raise money for it. And then we'll either have, if that, like, happens soon, we'll hopefully have the book ready for either the end of this summer mm-hmm. and be selling it at conventions like NamCon in Dublin
mm-hmm.
or have it in early in the year. So that would be for Erticon. This is also in Dublin. It's a convention.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, I'll tell you, I should probably tell you what Chroma is first.
It probably would be. Sorry. I'm pretty yeah. sure that, did my eyes deceive me, or were there fairies?
Fairies where?
In Chroma. I think I was just various things. The stuff looked cute, whatever I saw
for yeah, Chroma. Yeah, well, there is quite a bit of cuteness happening in there. It's all, how many do we have? I think we have 13, 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
We're all doing our own individual stories, and we have a theme of color, so we all like have one color, and then we do our comic in that particular color, and but that lets us to do the story as whatever. So I'm trying to think, fairies, who the heck has fairies?
I might be completely mistaken. Do not take this as gospel.
No, I should know. I'm one of the people who organized the whole damn thing, so I should really know whose story has what. Ooh, this is terrible. Well, my story has flying newts.
Okay.
Does that help at all? And a little girl. My friend Haley, she another artist, she has a comic on the web called Space Officer Twigs, mm-hmm. which is basically about a dog cop in space. Really well drawn, really cute, great premise on it. Anyway, and her story is based on her dog who had actually passed away during the year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a really lovely story. And her friend is doing a story about Cerberus, three-headed dog from the Greek mythology.
Yeah.
But it's a three-headed corgi.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's gonna be a great comic. Then another one about Panther who eats the sun and burns everything up. That's gonna be a good story. I don't know, there's another one about robots that get killed, robot children getting murdered. The comic's supposed to be all ages, so
okay. Okay, so the storyline may be serious, but the style may be child friendly in terms of the artwork in order to compensate.
Well, he promised me there was no blood or cursing, so I guess it's because it's robots he's gonna get away with it. This is the same guy who writes about Business Shark.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's another one about schoolgirls fighting monsters.
Mm-hmm.
That's
That sounds a bit anime. That sounds a bit.
Oh no, her style is very, very anime, and she's very into all that. So
okay, so it's sounding suspiciously like a tribute to Sailor Moon now. Schoolgirls fighting monsters.
Yeah, pretty much. I can't remember the theme song. I can't.
That's been years.
I've watched Sailor Moon.
To be honest, I've only ever heard the American one, so it's probably best I don't try and sing that. Yeah, it's probably for the best.
But it's the same theme tune.
I know, but it's just slowly returning to my brain now, and I really don't want it to return to my brain. It wasn't there.
Sailor Moon was great, but it's coming back actually. The new series of it's supposed to come out. It was supposed to come out this year, but apparently there's been delays, so it's not coming out to 2014. And I'm actually really looking forward to it.
Is it a reboot?
I think it's basically a reboot of Sailor Moon.
Okay. I mean, the whole thing they've done with Evangelion recently has been pretty good if you're looking at sort of reboots in that field.
Oh, yeah, I've been quite enjoying the new Evangelion stuff. I haven't seen the third movie, though, so shush.
We haven't seen the third movie, but I watched the first two.
Yeah, we haven't seen the second one, though. We have got the second one.
Yeah.
We just haven't.
Okay, yeah, the second one's great, but by the end of it, you're just going to be like, huh? No, what? No, stop doing that! Come back! What? Stop it! Get the damn robot, Shinji!
But this is terribly reassuring. It's not terribly reassuring.
Well, now, it's Evangelion. When has it ever been reassuring?
That's a good point. It's never been reassuring. Yeah. There was one important question, because you're the first female guest we've had on, and you're also a comics creator. It's been a big issue this past year, obviously starting off especially with Thought Bubble last year and the crapola that kind of erupted out of the winners of the sort of British Comics Awards that they had at Thought Bubble and maybe some thoughtless picking of speakers for panels at a particular Irish comics event earlier this year. This is what I want to ask. Is the visibility of female comics creators getting any better? Considering these two things that have happened.
Mm. Well, I'm like mainly I mainly focus like on the Irish convention scene, which is small. We're a very small comic scene at the moment. We're growing though. We have some great talent here. Absolutely. Fantastic talent, like Leanne Hamilton. Her work is fantastic, and she's getting a lot more attention now, which is great because she really deserves it.
We've hopefully got her on the podcast next month, people. Hopefully.
Oh, yes. Mm. Tune in for that.
Yeah.
It's great. See, I'm always a little bit wary about talking about it because we're so small. So if I accidentally offend someone, it's just really gonna come around and beat me in the ass, because we all know in Ireland we all know each other in Ireland.
so we're, you know, which ones suck?
I think the visibility, mainly because of like the access to like internet and stuff and how we can just put anything up there, I think the visibility for women writers and creators has been getting better over the years, but still not quite enough. It could, you know, we're still kind of like not on equal terms quite a lot. Like it's like 30 women and then 30% women and then 70% fellas. And it's growing, but just kind of slowly. Mm. It'd be nice if it, like, you know, be, you know, all Sonic and, you know, gotta go fast. Come on.
I mean, looking at it, because I've been paying a lot of attention to it this past year or so, and it seems to me that, obviously, in the indie scene, there seems to be more opportunities for women as creators, whether they're artists, writers, or obviously somebody like yourself who's, you know...
My work would not have survived in mainstream. Mm-hmm. I would have gone nowhere at all. I would never have been able to get my work out there mainstream wise. It's indie all the way for me.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because I'm a woman, but because my storylines and my ideas don't always tend to link in with the norm of a mainstream.
Yeah.
So the indie scene is fantastic for that, and I've always loved more indie comics than I would mainstream, because it's just you get a lot of different stuff.
Exactly. When I was big into the comic scene, it was it was at least 95% indie stuff. Mm. Tiny publishers and just like one person doing the art and the story and probably printing it off themselves, if it came to that. But that's where
I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, everything was done by me. I drew it, I wrote it, I promoted it, I published it. It's It's a lot of work. Very much worth it. Very much worth it, but still a lot of work.
Can I just ask, because it sounds like you've, you know, constantly got a head full of different ideas all at the same time. How do you go about prioritizing which storylines you actually want to work on?
I guess I really want... I think it's more about what can I achieve at this moment. Like I always say to people, you know, don't let your abilities hold you back. Just sit down and do it when people ask me advice about art. But I also think to myself, okay, if I do this story, am I good at this particular thing to be able to tell the story? Is my writing good enough to tell this particular story at its finest? Or is my art good enough to portray this story at its finest? So I kind of go that way. And I also kind of prioritize, like, what will come, what will be longer take, what can I do on the fly? Like, at the moment, like, the Earthbound God mainly came out because I'm in college. I'm actually heading into my last year of college. But this year I was redoing repeats because I fail at academics, because big words mean no. And yeah.
That's okay.
So I had a lot more free time this year. So I decided, what should I do? Should I like go be a respectful citizen and get a job? No, actually, I'm going to go write a book. Whee! So I did. That's how the Earthbound God came out. But originally, when I started off with the Earthbound God, it was only supposed to be like a 50-page story. Mm. It wasn't supposed to be like a graph. It wasn't supposed to be a series. Like, okay. The Earthbound God is a series. There's more to come.
Okay.
And I kind of started...
Thanks for the warning.
Yeah. There's going to be more. Oh, dear. when I wrote it and then I started storyboarding it and everything, I realized, oh, actually, there's a lot more happening here. And then my brain decided, oh, actually, let's give these characters more background stories. Oh, what happens if this happens afterwards? Oh, what happens if they go over there? And there's like, no, brain, stop. And then it decided to like come up with like 4 war books. And I couldn't stop it. And my brain just took over. So prioritizing is kind of hard, really. Now that the Earthbound God, my first graphic novel, was finished, I'm going to be taking a year off to do my final college year. Mm-hmm. But I'm not abandoning the Earthbound God altogether, though, because I do animation. So my final year, I'm going to be doing a self-contained Earthbound God story.
Ooh, okay.
And yeah, so next year that's going to come out next year, hopefully, if I don't fail, because animation is very hard.
Yeah.
Very, very hard. So that's going to be a short contained short film about Yaya in the desert hanging about with an Earthbound God bird.
Okay.
It's going to be very pretty. There's actually... If people are interested, I released a digital sketchbook today, and there's actual concept art for that short film in the sketchbook. So if people are interested and have a look at that, you can download it over on Dropbox.
Is that the link you were sharing around earlier? Because if so, I will link to it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I spam the internet with that link.
We'll make sure you guys get the link in the post right up for this episode. Don't worry, guys.
Yes. It's free to download, but if you're a kind soul, you can donate a small bit towards my PayPal, which is linked with the Dropbox link.
Okay.
So, you know, be a pal. Or just get it for free. Whatever. That's cool, too, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but there is actually no true answer to the actual question that I talked about for ages there. I really don't know how to prioritize a lot of my stories. I think it's just more like just decide, okay, I could do this now, I'm going to do this now. And I decided I'm going to do Bob this summer because her stories are quite short and I can just hop in and out with them. There's no contingency with her stories, they're literally just short issue things. And they're a comedy too, so I don't have to have a big glaring storyline. Okay. So, yes.
Okay. I think we're going to wrap this up soon, but there is one other thing I wanted to ask. Because obviously, you're based over on Ireland. You know the cons to go to over there. If one of our listeners, and most of our listeners are either from the UK or the US, if they find themselves in Ire, where are the best cons to go to during the year?
Okay, during the year, in November, was it October? Oh, feck. No, November. In November is Erdcom, which was Ireland's first convention. So it's the biggest, it's the biggest one that happens. So there's Erdcom, that's in Dublin, roughly around near the end of November. There's also NomCon. That's in August.
Okay.
NomCon is in its fourth year now, I believe. Is it fourth or is it second? No, I think it's the fourth year now. And that's one of my favorite conventions. NomCon is absolutely great, well organized, always has really cool guests. So that's also in Dublin. So I totally recommend people going to that. And do you mind if I just do a really quick plug while I'm just talking about NomCon there?
Of course. You're welcome to.
My friend Katie Fleming, she's coming out with her comic, The Devil's Faulty Goods. And it's basically a chain-smoking priest is babysitting self-questioning biblical figures in a post-apocalyptic city. Like, how sounds cool brilliant. Does that sound?
Yeah.
And she's actually debuting that at NomCon this year. So, yeah. If you're going to NomCon, visit her table. Because you should totally have a look at this comic. The artwork's great and the storyline looks great. And you can visit her Tumblr, which is thedevilsellsfaultygoods.tumblr.com. Oh, one word.
Okay.
So, there's my plug. I'm a good friend. Yay!
Yay!
There's also
that's okay.
There's ArcadeCon that's in June. That actually the ArcadeCon this year looks like it's going to be massive. It looks like it's going to be great. Crack. They have so many special guests coming, and I really wish I could name off a few of them just to impress people, but I can't because I have the memory of a badger. I apologize.
To us, it's badgers.
Like, how good does a badger's memory is? Come on. I can't remember shit.
I've never checked.
I've never checked either, but I assume they have bad memories. Yes, and there's the 2D Festival. That's in Derry. And that's actually happening end of May, early June. And that's a big comic festival.
Okay.
And they're gonna have they're gonna have like all the DC and Marvel like editor and comic makers there, and they're gonna be doing portfolio reviews, doing panels, and that's gonna be fantastic. They have huge names gonna be at 2D Festival this year, and you should totally look that up. It's 2dfestival.co.uk,
okay,
I believe, or is it .com? It's either one. 2D Festival. Put it in Google. It'll come up. I'm going to be selling there myself. Actually, if you can name a convention in Ireland, I'm more likely selling at them because that's how I make my money.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's also AkumaCon that's in Galway. That happens during the year. There's BroCon that's happening during the summer. That's in July, I believe. And that's in Limerick. I go to BroCon every year. I get a little frightened because I'm afraid I'm going to get stabbed. No, I apologize. That was a joke. Don't stab me. No, seriously, that was a joke. Seriously, okay. Don't stab me. No, that was a joke. And I think I may have named off all the conventions that I go to at least, and that is named off my tongue. There tends to be like a new convention like growing every year, which is really great because we have a massive nerd culture here in Ireland. And it's really great to actually go places and meet cool people who are also nerds because nerds are cool and yeah.
They should assemble.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But yes. There. Yeah. Oh no! I should have. I could have plugged that in. That would have been the best game ever. Oh no!
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, I lost my chance. I lost my chance of fame.
All right. As I've been hinting at, I'm afraid that is all we do have time for this week. So I think Anthony's going to have to take the lead here, and I'm going to say it's good night from...
Anthea, West, bye.
Bye.
you can find me at dustbunnystudios.com. I remembered. Yay.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Right, I'm Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
Okay, it's good night for me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett. Pretty boring, but come on.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also go and read some shizzle I've been writing over at drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. Nerds Assemble, you can find us over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, you can find us on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. That is all. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.